Welcome to Lord John Lander, the Outlander podcast for Lord John fans, where we talk about all things Outlander, but especially about Jaime and his Sassenach.
And sometimes we talk about Claire, too.
For however long it takes, we'll lead you on a journey so chaotic, you'll question every life choice that led you to be here today. And like the Hotel California, you can check out anytime, but you can never leave.
We may not be the Outlander podcast you wanted, but we will be the Outlander podcast you didn't know you needed.
Now, before we get into it, this is your one and only warning that show and book spoilers are lurking around every corner. We're going to spoil stuff from future seasons, future books, and our own brains.
Remember, if you can't prove our headcanon didn't happen, then we can only assume that it did.
If you make it through the episode in one piece, we'd love to hear from you. Send us your burning questions, wild theories, thick prompts, flattering compliments, or whatever's on your mind. You can contact us on Twitter and Tumblr at Lord John Lander or on our website at lordjohnlander.wordpress.com, where you'll also find our archived episodes, teasers, thick recs, and more.
Hello, welcome to Lord John Lander. We're your hosts. I'm Mistress Pandora. You can call me Pan. My co-host is here too, of course.
Hey everyone, it's Beth.
You may have noticed that this probably posted on a weird day. I have no idea what day this is going to have posted, but for us, it's about the 10th of October. And we wanted to do kind of a short little mini episode because Comic-Con just happened in New York and Beth was fortunate enough to go. And there was some stuff that we wanted to chat about. Nothing planned here. We have no idea what this is going to entail specifically. But here we are. We have thoughts and feelings. And so we're going to share our thoughts and feelings with you, whether you like it or not. So, Beth, I have never been to a Comic-Con before. The last convention I went to was a Star Wars convention. It was like 2005. Very long time ago.
Yeah.
What's it like? I've seen pictures. I've seen stuff on YouTube and social media and things. And it looks like a flippin' madhouse. But also all of the cool stuff happens there. So, like, I feel like I've not been part of this secret club. So can you kind of tell me what's it really like?
Yeah, so I had never been to a con before last year, and Comic-Con in New York last year was very, like, they sold fewer tickets. There were a lot fewer companies doing exhibitions because of the pandemic. So last year was kind of crazy because there was this whole system where we had to do a verification of our vaccination status before we could even go in. So that was one adventure. But then this year they were back in full swing. And it's at the Javits Center in New York, which it's huge. It's a giant convention center. It goes across, like, I want to say 3 to 4 city blocks, not the long blocks, the shorter blocks, but still, that's like big.
That's huge.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful convention center. But it's interesting because, at one point I just was talking with this random person, and she was saying that, oh, because the bathrooms were really crowded. And she said that she's actually worked other events at the Javits Center. And she said, it's not really designed for one big event. It's designed for a lot of smaller or medium sized events to be happening simultaneously, which made a lot of sense. So
yeah,
it's a very odd building, and Comic-Con itself doesn't do itself any favors. The signage is really bad. Like, there'll be like one big sign, but then it's not really leading you where you need to go.
Oh no.
And the the different floors are kind of weird how they connect. It's not very ADA friendly. There are elevators in like the far, far end of the convention center. There are elevators, and I'm sure there's a few other small ones here and there that I didn't see, but I mean, I got there and I have some troubles with like vertigo. And one of the first things that happened was, because I got there Saturday night and I was by myself Saturday night, one of the first things that happened was I had to go down an escalator. The escalators had in that spot were not functioning. I don't know if they were broken or if they turned them off purposefully so people could go up and down. But I don't know if you've ever walked down an escalator that's not working.
I hate it.
It's disorienting. Like,
yes,
because of my vertigo. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going to die. and like, because the floors are so weird, like some of the floors are only like on the perimeter of the building. So there'd be signs for something and I'd go down and then I'd see another sign. It would look like I had to go back up again and it didn't make any sense. At one point, so I went to the Sam Heughan Q&A on Saturday. I had originally wanted to try to go to the Back to the Future panel right before it, but I didn't even get reservations because I was in queue for the reservations and they just literally sold out for lack. They don't cost anything extra, but for lack of a better term, they sold out before I even made my way up the queue. And I could do a whole separate episode on how horrible their queue is and the fact that they use like 5 different platforms for like signups for different things, but I won't even go there. Yeah.
That's not streamlined. I want to pause.
Yeah.
That's not streamlined at all. I want to pause for a second because you mentioned, I just wanted to clarify something for our non-American listeners. You said that it's not very ADA friendly. What she means by that, folks, if you're not from here, is that's what we mean by like accessibility for people who have mobility issues or other disabilities, that kind of thing. The ADA is kind of the standard.
Yeah, it's the Americans with Disabilities Act. So, yeah. Yeah, so it took me a really long time to find where I needed to be. And, you know, I'm sure they've got tons of really good staff, but some of the people I encountered, like I was like, hi, like I need to get to the main stage. And everybody I asked was trying to direct me to the main stage, but nobody said like, oh, actually, though, you need to go to Q Hall if you're getting to an event at the main stage, right? So, and at one point, I followed the sign where it said main stage, but it was like at the exit of the main stage. And then I went another way, followed another sign, and I ended up in like tabletop gaming or something. So I kept walking. I'm like, it's got to be here. And I get to the back and it just looks like a bathroom and a dead end. And there's an info desk. And I'm like, so how do I get to the main stage? And they said, right through there. I'm like, there's nothing there. And then he's like, no, those doors. And it's like double doors that like look like they go out onto like an alley or something.
Oh,
and has like an exit sign. So I go through those, and that was not the most direct route to get there. But again, he didn't say like, if you've got to line up though, you need to, you know.
Yeah, which should have been implied, I would think. That's so much extra walking. That sounds awful.
I was up and down different floors like 3 or 4 different times before I found my way there too, because the signs were so bad. And what happens is they have maps, but the maps show the 5 floors separately, and they don't show you how they interconnect.
Oh God.
So it's just like, and they're like, they say like level 3, and I'm like, there are no numbers. I'm like, Like, once you get into the annex building, like the newer part, there's like, there are number, like it's very clearly numbered, but in the main part of the Javits Center, it's like, okay, but I don't even know what floor I'm on. Anyway, so I got down there. I finally found my way there, got there a little early, and the Sam Heughan panel on Saturday night was separately ticketed, meaning you had to pay to be in it, to go to it.
Wow.
And so, yeah.
Is that a common thing? Is that a common thing? Did you notice?
No.
Or?
No, they had a couple separately ticketed panels for some big, for a couple big things, but like generally speaking, it's not. And I was going with a friend who lives on Long Island, and she had a wedding Saturday, so she wasn't going to go on Saturday. So I had actually like hemmed and hawed, like, do I want to go Saturday at all? And the Saturday tickets were sold out, but some of Sam's panel tickets, you also got a Saturday badge.
Oh,
so
okay.
I was like, all right. So I paid my like $100 or whatever, but those for like the ticket and the panel and the badge for the day.
Okay.
So like I could have gone all day on that. So that was, you know, not an expensive, you know, thing. But I had the cheap seats. There were like multiple tiers for this stuff with Sam, because he had like all these things like different photo ops, and it was just a very like, for Sam specifically, like they had like this whole separate thing. So a lot of people, you know, had bought like the brown haired lass tier or the Sassenach tier or whatever. And they you know, it's cheesy.
Corny.
And they got in first. Like they had like priority seating based on what tier you bought. So I knew I was like in the cheap seats, and, you know, I made some friends with people that were in front of me, and we were like, yeah, we're in the poor seats. but there was like hardly any staff down there working.
Wow.
The queue. It was very confusing because we were told like everybody get in the same line, and when you get to the front, we'll sort you into your queue. But we got to a point where we weren't moving up any further, but no one was telling us anything. And I was like, and then like people were cutting the line. People were like going through the different, like they had these metal bars set up for the queue. And like, so it was just very unclear what was happening. And I said to the people in front of me, I'm like, are we just chumps? Like that we're just standing here doing what we were told? Like, I don't know.
It's like chaos, just absolutely in a not a good way.
Yeah. And there was one guy at the front, and then this other guy who was like running up and down, like next to the queue, trying to tell people things. And you like literally couldn't get his attention because he was like a man on a mission. And then finally, I see this other woman with this like a staff crew shirt, whatever. And she's like talking to people. So I'm like, oh, I said, excuse me. And she goes, if you have a question about Sam Heughan, I don't know. And I didn't really know what she meant. I didn't really know what she meant by that. Like, I thought maybe she meant like Sam Heughan himself as a person or something.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I just want to know how we know if we're on the correct line. She went off on me like so, like completely disproportional, because I simply asked a question in a very even, very nice tone. She's like, I told you I don't know, blah blah blah, I work in that part. And I was like, okay, like she was getting aggressive with me.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, I'm sorry. I asked a question. You don't know. That's fine. Like, it's okay. You know, no big deal. And then she was kind of like, oh, sorry. I just had an energy drink or something. And I was like,
I was like an energy drink?
I was like, okay, but Listen, it sounds like you've had a long day, but I very nicely asked you a question. So I don't think that was very, you know, can't remember exactly what I said, but like, I think I was like, that was a little disproportionate to, and I'm sure people were harassing her down at the other parts of the line, but like, I don't know. So anyway, we did finally make it in. However, they told everybody that, like, even when we got our tickets, it was like all the people have to be there at least 15 minutes before the panel starts or you mm-hmm. risk your seats. So they loaded all of the higher tier people in. And right. then we were still just standing there and standing there and standing there. So it felt like they were waiting to see if more of the higher tiered people would come, but it was like 7:55.
Oh and my I'm gosh.
Like, what the heck? Finally, they let us in and it had already started.
What?
They let us in at 8:05 and I believe it must have started at 8:00 on the dot. There was no reason for that. And it wasn't even full. It was not like the room was full. It was really, and we were towards the front, me and my friends that I made in the line. So like other people it was a huge line. So other people like missed, you know, like 5 to 7 to 10 minutes of it. Anyway, so that was good. The panel was good. Sam was adorable. I so much admire the way he is able to roll with the punches with stuff like this, because it always gets awkward. It always gets cringy. And Sam is just always, he is just always on and able to keep things going. And he has such a good humor and he thinks so well on his feet that he always saves the day. Like last year, it was really weird because the rest of the cast couldn't get their visas to come to the Comic-Con because of the pandemic. So it was Sam, Meryl, and Diana that were there, because he had a visas because he has so much business that he does in the U.S.
Yeah.
And everybody else was on like just big screens videoed in, but like there was a delay because there always is. And they couldn't hear the audience. So it was very weird, but Sam, like he kept that whole thing going. Like he was just, wow. He's just, his professionalism with this stuff is like not matched. I'm telling you. That's but anyway, incredible. So the panel was okay. The guy who was the moderator was kind of, I don't know, I guess he's like one of Sam's agents. And what they did is they had collected these cards with questions. I don't even know how you got a card to ask a question. I don't know if you had to pay more to get a card. Nobody offered me a card, but it's fine. I really tend not to ask questions at these things, but if I'd known I could write something down and be anonymous, like I might have really been like,
well, they apparently do that because of stuff that has happened. Let's just call a spade a spade. Yeah. Sam has stalkers in this fandom and they're dangerous and they harass him and make him uncomfortable. So I have heard from people who have worked conventions, not Comic-Con, but other conventions, mm-hmm. that's part of his contract, is he requires that those questions to be screened by his agent.
Yeah. I mean, I get so much secondhand embarrassment. So especially during the more of the virtual age for like from like 2020 through like parts of 2021, when it was all like there were like a lot of different like virtual events and people just could like type in questions, like mm-hmm. there would be so many, like there were just sometimes gross questions and just really inappropriate. Yeah, so I don't blame him for doing that. So he was reading the questions, it was going well, he told some really funny stories, it was good. And then it got to be like, it was only an hour. It got to be around like 8:45 or so. And the guy's like flipping through the questions, the moderator, and then he's like, you know what? We're going to do something different. Sam doesn't even know we're going to do this. And Sam's face is like, what the hell is going on? And then he's like, you know what? You, sir, he like points to some guy in the audience. He's like, come up on stage. And you. And then, of course, people like catch on and they're raising their hands. So he ended up bringing about 10 people on stage, not knowing at all what they were doing. And Sam is just like, what the fuck?
Where was his security?
I think that guy was his security. I don't know. So anyway, so
he's still employed.
I know, right? So the people are up there and he's like, so here's what we're going to do. I've got Sam's book here. I'm going to have each of you read some of the book to Sam, which first of all is like, why? That's a really weird thing to do at a panel. Like
he knows what's in it. He wrote it.
He does. He knows what's in it. And we want to hear him answer questions that people submitted. Like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, how bizarre. You can't see my face because we don't have the camera on, but I'm cringing hard. This is deeply uncomfortable.
In my head, I'm already going like, I mean, I don't know if it's just because I'm a decent human being or because I used to be a teacher or I have kids with special needs, but like immediately my head is going like, what if one of these people can't read?
Yeah.
And now they're stuck on the stage. Like, what if one of these people can't read? And then right before it starts, the moderator's like, oh, I hope everybody I brought up is literate. Like, it was a joke. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, buddy, you better hope so.
Okay.
I'm just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So, and then the first guy, there was one guy. And he gave him the book. And the guy said, like, I don't read very well. And I'm like, oh, my God. He actually read fine. Like, he was, like,
embarrassed.
Yeah, he did like very well. Oh. And Sam was like, whoa, you're good. Like, you should read more audiobooks and stuff. And again, Sam, top-notch professional, like taking this in stride and making the best of it. And I have to say that by some miracle, the people that got pulled up were like all really good, not only good sports about it, but they didn't make it weird. Like they were kind of like playing up the humor and like, you know, being like a little like funny and theatrical with what, you know what I mean? Like it was,
yeah.
But you could tell Sam was just like, and they were reading the foreword, which was like a lot of people praising, like it was not Sam's voice. It was a lot of people like praising Sam that he's known in his career, which I think was kind of uncomfortable for him.
That sounds uncomfortable.
And then then Sam was like, okay, you know, after like three or four people, he's like, maybe that's enough. But then the other people on the stage were like, what? You know, like they actually wanted their chance. So what, they let one more person read, and then finally the moderator was like, let's have Sam read some. And so he gives the book to Sam, and then like it was like three or four women that were left, and Sam's like, everybody sit, and like they kind of like gathered around him, kind of like a, you know, it was like a little like family scene. Like one girl was like propped on the edge of his chair, like leaning over while he's reading. So it ended up okay, but I was like, holy shit, like really? Oh my God,
that had so uncomfortable for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like I said, stalkers having to take legal action kind of thing. Like, you can't have... I'm glad it worked out.
I mean, just the fact that, like, he didn't clear it with Sam. Like, he surprised Sam.
Yeah.
Your job, you don't do that. Like, especially as an agent, you should know, like, that's not something that you do.
As an agent for someone who's had the experiences...
Yeah.
That Sam has had. with this group. Maybe, okay, not these individuals necessarily, but with this group, right? Like, that's terrifying. But you know what? We don't deserve Sam.
No, we don't.
He's too good for us.
He, you know, sometimes he does and says dumbass things and I get mad at him. But like, overall, he is like a consummate professional. And he is, I mean, he is, to in my opinion, he is so worried about making everybody else feel comfortable, you know, that he does it to the detriment of his own comfort sometimes. Yeah. Because he's very much a people pleaser and, you know, always just wants to try to make sure everyone else is comfortable. But yeah, well, we don't deserve Sam. He's just an amazing person, you know.
I want to know, what was the best part of the experience for you? Because like sounds like it was an absolute madhouse and very, very poorly, not necessarily staffed, but just like it wasn't executed very well. And those are, I cannot imagine the amount of work and planning that goes into pulling one of those things off.
Yeah.
I know that the convention that I went to in 2005 was smaller. It was a single fandom. It was just Star Wars. And they had the convention center staff. They had the upstaffing for the event. And then they also had the 501st, which if you're not in the Star Wars fandom, the 501st is an organized group of cosplayers and they all dress as stormtroopers. If you see a bunch of stormtroopers walking around, it's probably the 501st. And they were That's running awesome. Security. It was very cool.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Like it was fun. They were helping to, you know, direct traffic and stuff. So my memory of that, which is, you know, fading because it was so many years ago, was that it was a little bit more organized than that, but it was also still, it was still chaotic. I can't imagine. And that was Indianapolis. I can't imagine New York.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's crazy.
I mean, the costumes were great. So then I went the next day too. So, and this time I went with my friend and who I met through the fandom, and we had the panel with Sam, David, Duncan, and Diana. So
that sounds 75% awesome.
Yeah. So and I did get to I did get to meet I met a couple of them last year at Comic-Con too, but I did get to see a couple people that I know from Twitter who are really cool and just got to talk to them and say hi. And that's always really nice.
That's because, so fun.
Because, you know, and especially because my fandom experience has not always been great. It was really nice to see the people, some people that, you know, have always been nice and good to talk to and stuff like that. And then of course my friend that I was with, who's like, who I met through the fandom, who's like one of my best friends now. So, but we'll talk about the panel last, because I do want to say that the best part of it was that I got to get my picture taken with David Barry. it was very, very fast. But I did get to put my arm around him and he put his arm around me. I'm replacing my wedding photo with the 8x10 of me and David Barry. Now, but that was awesome. Although I have to say again, the experience up to that point to get to that picture was not great. Like, I'll try to be really quick, but like, it's in this very big room, and there's like all these cues for autographs, but there's no sign. Like, so if you want to get an autograph from like David Barry, you'd pay cash, $60 cash or something. And he'd be over there at certain times and you could get like an autograph and a selfie. But there was no signage for what's going on with the photos. So we just kind of kept walking, trying to figure out, you know, we had gotten there. We were supposed to get there around 1:45 for a 2 o'clock photo, but we got there around one because we weren't sure what the lines were going to be like. Yeah. And finally, some very nice woman said, oh, so there's no queue really for the photos until it's time to go. So we all just have to stand here in front of this like desk or whatever. And then some guy comes out with a microphone and is like, okay, group one, David Barry. And then you kind of have to scoot really fast to get in the queue for.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like being at like a, you know, like a, what's cattle auction or something. Like, and so we were like, okay, well, we're not standing here for 45 minutes, you know, and we. So we, you know, went outside, went to the bathroom, whatever, come back. And again, so we were, the crowd there by where we had to wait to hear our group called was so big. It was like spilling out a little into like not blocking the autograph queues, but like in front of them. And this mm-hmm. woman who works there is like, you cannot block the crews or the autograph queues. You have to move. You can't be here. And it wasn't just us. There were other people. But my friend and I, you know, who are both, I mean, she's like a New Yorker. And even though I'm upstate, I got the attitude. Because people don't realize, but upstate people think we're different. We're not. We're still New Yorkers. Like, you put us with a Southerner and it's very clear that we're New Yorkers. So my friend and I at the same time were like, where would you like us to go? You know? So that was, you know, whatever. But yes, yeah, so it was so quick. Like, you get in this queue and you wait, and then they're like, okay, let's go. And you all go into this little smaller area and put your bags and stuff on a table and then get in line again. And David's just standing there in front of like a backdrop. And it's just like, next. And like someone goes, they click the picture, and then you leave. Like, there's, it's like yeah. so fast. So I didn't even remember to smell him. I'm a little disappointed with myself. Okay. And also,
I was going to ask, but I'm like, no, Pan, don't be weird. We were just talking about being weird about Sam. Don't be weird about David.
It just happened so fast. Mm-hmm. The night before, my friend and I had been looking at pictures that people were posting, and someone had like their arm like kind of in around the front of David too, and like their hand was like resting on his stomach, and she was like, oh my god, who would do that? And I was like,
wrong photo.
I was like, I'm gonna do a full hug. I'm like, I'll ask him if it's okay, but I'm gonna do it. But honestly, it was so fast, I didn't even feel yeah. comfortable asking him if it was okay if I put my other arm around him. So I just, which is probably by design, so I just, you know, we just have our arms around each other's backs. But okay, so that was the best part, was touching David Barry for less than a second.
So, you know what though? Worth it. Worth it.
Worth it.
Worth it.
Worth the $80. Worth the $80. Worth it. Man, if hookers were selling by that rate, like, they'd be making a lot of money. Like, $80 for a nanosecond. Okay. You'd be making bank, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just saying.
We have slightly gone off the rails. So this panel.
Yes, the panel. So the panel, like I said, was Duncan, Sam, David, and Diana, and then some moderator who like clearly had never read the books or watched the show or anything. And it was more of a, initially it was like the moderator, like kind of just kind of asking them questions and trying to get them in conversation. Sure. And so very early on in that part, I can't even remember, they were talking about the fans, which, you know, kind of always makes like, especially Sam, like cringe a little. Cause it's like, you know, there's the fans and then there's the fucking psycho people that stalk him and do all sorts of other things. And then Diana said, buckle up. And she has said this before on Twitter as well, and gotten a lot of flack for it And she still decided to say it again. She said, well, the first time I took met Sam and Katrina, I took them out for lunch. And I told them, look, my fans are wonderful. They're intelligent, you know, witty, like all very nice people. I've never had a bad fan experience. And she said, and then I said, but mind you, I think that's because people with mental derangements generally don't have the attention span or capacity to read one of my books. And I mean, if there was a little bit of laughter in the audience, but it wasn't what she was hoping for, I think. Sam, David, and Duncan all three looked pretty uncomfortable. Like, Sam looked like he was kind of like smiling and nodding because that's just him. Like, he's just like trying to make everything okay. Like, yeah. But you could tell, like, it looked like the vein in his forehead was going to pop. Duncan was like kind of covering his mouth and almost smirking, but I got the vibe that it was like, I can't believe she said this. Like, what is happening? And David looked just, he doesn't hide his face very well. He just looked really uncomfortable. Yeah. So, and like I said, that's not the first time she said that. She told that same story on Twitter and received a lot of flack for it and somehow still thought it appropriate to tell the story again. So
I found that panel on YouTube. Well, okay, I didn't find it. A friend found it and shared the link. So I watched it. I didn't watch the entire panel, I'm not going to lie, because this, we'll say zinger, because that's what was in the headline that Deadline put out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm still, like, we've been talking about this, guys, for us, like, as we're recording this now, we've been talking about this for a solid 24 hours, and I'm still not calmed down.
Yeah.
Yeah, David's face. We could link.
Yeah, we can link it. Yeah.
Like that.
And I took some screenshots too.
David's face, he looks so uncomfortable. And I think it's prudent to point out that David's been very public with his mental health struggles.
Yeah, he has. And he's probably, I think, one of the only ones in the cast that's ever really spoken about that, you know, and even in the context of Outlander, because he, like, one of the first times he spoke out about his mental health struggles, he talked about, I think it was when they were filming season 4, and they had him come out to Scotland, and I think most people probably know, but he's Australian. So they had him come out to Scotland, and they made him like stay there kind of like on call for up to, I think it was almost like a month. And then he only really had to be filming for like a smattering of days, but they just had him there like on the hook. And I think that was really tough on his mental health. And I believe his child was probably only like 1 or 2 at the time. So, I mean, that's a lot. He's got a family, wife, kid, you know.
Half a planet away.
Yeah. And, you know, he's definitely, you know, said like he suffered with like, I think mostly depression. But yeah. So, yeah, he looked like definitely just like, oh my God. But you know, the moderator was laughing away and they just sort of breezed past it. Which, I mean, I understand you're at a con, you're not gonna like start an argument or whatever. You know what I mean? But
right, time and place, and hey, we have a podcast and you were in the audience.
Yeah. And then I'll note too that later when they started doing Q&A, one of the women that asked a question prefaced her question by saying, I'm one of those people that does have difficulty getting through reading a book. And so she said, so thank God for audiobooks and Davina Porter.
Yeah, she took that and turned it. So that was, I was like cheering for her while I was watching. I watched because she had mentioned that that happened. So I was watching for it. Yeah, you know, such a, what a way to alienate your fan base.
But the problem is, like, she's not, there are some people that she's alienating in the fan base. But, like, generally speaking, she's not alienating the fan base because there are so many people who would have, who have no issue with what she said. There were, yeah, I mean, as much
I agree.
As, I mean, when she said it on Twitter, again, there were people that gave her flack for it, but there were a ton of other people who were just like, oh, calm down. It was just a joke. That's not what she meant, you know.
But jokes are funny.
She has a lot of sycophants too, yep. Which I'm sure every author does, but like, I don't know. I've never seen it like it is in this fandom. Like, I have just never very. Seen,
yeah.
I was going to say, course, I've never seen an author be as offensive as she is, as regularly as she is, and continue to get away with it. So
I'm just going to go ahead and say it. She's not popular enough to get canceled.
It's true. It's
like,
true.
That's kind of where I'm at. And is that mean and shitty of me to say? I don't give a damn. Like, I don't care.
No, it's just a fact. She's popular in a niche.
Yes.
Like in a niche, right? And she's popular in a genre. Generally speaking, I mean, they usually put her in like fantasy stuff, right? So like if you see her compared to people, she's usually compared to people like George R.R. Martin and stuff like
which
that.
Is not fair to George R.R. Well, Martin. That's just not nice.
I mean, you know. But she's, I mean, she's nowhere near like his level of popularity.
Yeah.
So she's, and if you think about it, I mean, she's never written anything that I'm aware of outside of the Outlander universe, which by definition makes her niche. Like,
very, yeah.
No matter how popular Outlander is, if you've only ever written and published in one universe, you're niche, unless you're Stephen King, because that doesn't count because his multiverse, is like, vast, you know, it's not even on the same level, but anyway, yeah. So yeah, she's not popular enough to get canceled, and she has enough fans that she is popular with that think very much like her.
Yeah.
And I don't want to start a generation war on here, but I think she has a lot of fans that are of the same generation as her. And generally speaking, not everybody, but generally, or a lot of, they don't find stuff like that offensive. So here we are.
Yeah. Where to go from here? I can tell you from my personal experience, this has put me off quite a bit. And I wish I could say I was both shocked and appalled that she said this before. I don't know, because I don't follow her. I keep myself separated from the cast and crew, from authors. That's how I fandom privately with other fans, because I was in the Supernatural fandom. And I love Misha Collins, but there are no boundaries and it terrifies me. And there are a few cast members that I think are just funny enough to pull some shenanigans. And I don't need that in my life. Like, that's not the attention I need. So, and I say that with love, by the way. I say that with love. And there are, because it's the same ones. Like, I wish I could interact with this tweet, but I'm not going to, because I have every day is bisexual Jamie Fraser day in my profile, and it's just too close.
It's too close.
you're so, it's funny because I fandom not vastly differently, but a little bit differently. Like, I tend to try to, like, just read the room and just do my stuff, like, appropriately. Like I, you know, Sam and Katrina have been, rightfully so, very sort of standoffish on social media.
Yeah.
Mostly since I joined the fandom. So I joined the fandom pretty much right around when COVID hit, and there was that huge thing with Sam when he was in Hawaii. And ever since that, he has, his posts have been way less personal than they used to be.
Yeah.
And very much more so about, you know, promoting his whiskey or promoting the peakers and stuff like that, and just not personal, like very much just about like promoting his stuff. And Katrina is just very quiet on social media. She you know, she didn't post pretty much at all during most of her pregnancy. You know, so I take that cue, and so I don't really try to interact with them very much. But like in my other fandom, 911 Lone Star, the main, one of the main characters, he loves social media. He loves interacting with fans. Like, so I'm just all over that, like, you know, interacting with him and stuff. So,
and that makes sense. Read the room. So, but I say that just as another reminder that I don't follow Diana Gabaldon on any social media. I don't read her posts. They show up. I think I have her muted. I don't think I actually have her blocked. But
I don't follow her either, but I'm a glutton for drama. Like, I don't like to be involved in the drama, but I like to watch the drama. So
you enjoy a tea party as much as the next person.
I do.
That's why we're here. But I have never felt so alienated by a fandom creator or somebody important in the fandom. And let me put this into context, because when you consider, we've discussed that I've been in multiple fandoms. When you consider the amount of shit I've gone through in fandom, this is pretty freaking significant.
Yeah.
I have been kicked off of the Star Wars message boards for fan fiction.
Oh my God.
Back in the early 2000s, I got kicked off.
That's a story for another day.
I used to be a badass in a very, very nerdy way. I wrote Vampire Chronicles fan fiction at the height of Anne Rice's Legal Beagles taking stuff down. I had stories removed and lost them. So there are things that I've written that I just may never find again, although I did find a really old thumb drive that has a few of them on there if the files aren't corrupted. But that didn't put me off.
Yeah.
Like, those things didn't put me off. I got kicked off of a message board. I had my work, my hard work when I was very young and impressionable. Okay, very young. I was in my early 20s. Was taken down without any warning. I just, like, I logged on one day and it was gone.
Ugh.
I lived through Destiel becoming canon and then Castiel coming out and going to Super Hell in the same freaking episode. I lived through that. And this is more alienating to me. The statement that just these sweeping negative statements about mental health, the ableist bullshit, the bigotry, it's so incredibly alienating.
It is. We don't need to rehash it, but we did talk a little bit about it during our season one finale. And I mean, you and I and a lot of our fandom friends have been through a lot of shit with the Outlander fandom too. And it's related to bigotry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's adjacent to her stuff. And in my mind, she encourages it in certain things, the way she says certain things and stuff like that. But
maybe not directly, but yeah.
Right, it's like not a direct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not like saying she like says, yeah, go get him. Like, but she, the way she generally speaks about some of these issues, it makes it feel like it's okay for other fans to be not nice people, you know? Because she's not nice on social media either. I mean, I know you don't follow her, but like she, first of all, she, whenever someone asks her a question that she decides to answer, instead of just answering, she quote tweets them. Which is like, so, like it's so egotistical because it's like, obviously because like she wants to make sure that everyone sees what she's saying.
Okay. So you said that before, like on Discord or something, just chatting. And I didn't understand because I don't tweet her. I'm there, but I don't know how it works. I don't know the etiquette. I have no freaking clue. So if I've ever interacted with you guys and like offended you because I'm really bad at Twitter, I live on Tumblr, people. Like, which I didn't know that was a thing. It's completely different. So, I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know that there was like a hierarchy of assholishness and how you engage on the platform.
Because what happens is, if you quote tweet it, it becomes like an original tweet. So if somebody's, so one, it's more likely to end up on people's timelines in the feed. And two, when you go to look at somebody's profile, there's like a tab for tweets and then a tab for tweets and replies. So if you just look at the tweets, you're going to see the quote tweets, but you're not, unless you click over, you're not going to see just stuff that she's randomly replied to. A really good example is just like the fact that I will quote tweet stuff that I love and I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. And I will quote tweet stuff that pisses me off, like that article from Deadline. But I don't generally quote tweet other people unless I'm calling them out and I want people to see it.
That makes sense. Okay. Thank you for the social media lesson.
You're welcome. So yeah, she quote tweets people and she's very rude. Like even when people are like asking, like they're, you know, she's not even being like offensive or anything, but she's very just like, she comes off as just so rude to people and I don't even know. It's just not a good look. And
yeah.
I don't know. So generally speaking, yeah. And I don't follow her either. I also have her muted, but I will go look if one of my friends is like, hey, Diana's showing her ass again on Twitter. So, yeah. Or if I start seeing people like rumbling about something she said. But anyways, yeah. So there's people that she offends, but like if you go on one of her offensive tweets and say something to her, either she's going to quote tweet you and be rude, or like her adoring horde of fans is going to tell you, is going to gaslight you, tell you that's not what she meant, talk about you that you're so easily offended, you know, and she won't give a shit.
Yeah.
Diana doesn't give a shit. Mm-mm. So.
No, what are they going to do? Unpublish her books?
Right. Like, exactly. So, yeah.
So I just pulled up the Deadline article again. And I will say, hey, they corrected David Barry's name because it was wrong. And some crazy person named Mistress Pandora Writes Things may have been really mean about calling them out about it to their face, but that's okay. And then some other people did it. It wasn't just me. It was at least one other person.
I did it too. I was like, what kind of editorial standards do you guys have?
I'm sure his name wasn't written anywhere in the convention center.
Nowhere.
I'm sure. I mean,
we were all like, who's this guy? Like, never seen him before.
God bless. You know? So, which, okay. At least it was like, so for those of you who didn't see it before they changed it, the author of the quote unquote author of this article called him John Barry, which he is our Lord John. Yes. Yes. That is accurate. However, he has a real name. Let's use it. Be respectful. Anyway.
Well, and that writer is obviously like a Diana super fan or something, because another place where I saw the headline, it was like on her Twitter, and she was like, the queen reigned during this thing. And it pisses me off because I don't even know if she was originally supposed to be part of it, because it was called Two Highlanders and a Lord, like Sunday tea with two Highlanders and a Lord. And then she was coming. Yeah. And then that's still what they called it. But then Diana was there too. And I'm like, this is.
Oh.
Yeah. It's interesting though, because this was not a Starz sponsored panel.
Mm-hmm.
So typically Comic-Con, like there will be, like last year they were promoting season 6. So it was a Starz sponsored panel, which means that, you know, some people may have been obligated to be there, you know, because of contract, whatever. Yeah. But I feel like Diana probably behaves herself a little better on a Starz sponsored panel. Not great, but she can control it. I know she can. But this was not a Starz sponsored panel. It, you know, from what I understand of it, you know, this was just something that like Sam, like he had his own contract with Comic-Con to like do all his photo ops and his separate panels and stuff, which, you know, I think is like why they cost extra money and stuff like that.
Right.
That makes sense. And then David and Duncan also like got contracts to do this with Sam and whatever. And Diana had obviously worked. She was the first one announced. So she obviously worked through her own agents or whatever. So I feel like she might not have said that if it was a Starz sponsored panel.
That's possible.
Because Starz has no obligation to her. They own the rights. They own the TV rights to that to the Outlander universe. They don't have to have her as a consultant. They don't have to send her the dailies, which she reminds us of every time she talks, that she gets the dailies. You know, they don't have to do that. So I feel like she probably behaves herself better on those sponsored panels than she did on this one. And that tells me that she, you know, because I think somebody said on Twitter, like, oh, and I'm not even going to get into this debate, but like, maybe, you know, maybe she doesn't realize. And she knows what she's saying. She is able to control it. She's said the exact same thing before. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah, I'm very happy for her that she's never had a bad fan experience. But Diana, your fans are having bad fan experiences from your fans who act just like you. So.
Yeah.
Maybe freaking cool it.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe think about other people. And it's, you know, she's always so like, you know, my books have been out for 30 years. Like, okay, but you now have fans that were not even born when your first books came out. And they're going to be thinking a little differently. Yeah. And you need to adjust to that fan base. I mean, if she wants to actually endure, you know, she's needs to adjust, because there are going to be people that are just going to be like, I mean, most of the fans that I know that are my age or younger, and especially the younger ones, they love the books, they read the books, but they do not want anything to do with her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, and it's like, you know, what are you going to do when all your, I'm not even going to go there. But yeah, it would be nice to consider that things have changed in the last 30 years since Outlander was first written. Times have changed, fans have changed, standards have changed. Just be a little sensitive to that. Like just like the tiniest modicum of sensitivity to the fact that things are different now.
Yeah. I really take umbrage to being told that someone with mental derangements shouldn't have the intelligence to read one of her books. I've read all of her books. Yeah. I probably won't again because, you know, I don't talk about it, but I have mental health issues that get in the way of a lot of things and can make it very hard to function as a normal person. And that's why I'm personally, like, I'm so upset about this because I took personal offense. And honestly, yeah. I feel like the fandom deserves a fucking apology.
Well, and it's like, what does she even mean by derangements? Like, what, that's not like a, like, what is her, what does that even mean? Like, what is she, like, that's not even a term that we use anymore.
No, it's like crazy people. We don't say that either.
Yeah. And like, I don't hide it. And I may have mentioned it in passing on the show before, but, or on the, our show before, but like I have ADHD, and I'm blessed that most of the time that means that I will hyper focus on a book and read it like straight for, you know, 48 hours and finish it. But like right, but then I also go through spells. Like right now I have not finished a book in like 2 or 3 months because my brain has just completely shifted to other things. Mm-hmm. And right now, books are boring to my brain. And
that has nothing to do with intelligence.
You're damn right, because I'm a smart bitch. Mm-hmm. And yes. I'm just doing other shit and using other parts of my brain to do stuff like this, like my writing, you know, my job, which I'm really good at. So, you know, no one's going to tell me that just because I go through phases with my ADHD where I can't read books, that has nothing to do with how smart I am. Nope. And, you know, I'm also out there at other times, you know, blowing through, like, I think I read like 35 books in the first like 6 months of the year, you know, like, so it just is. You know, and that woman who stood up, she'll probably never hear this, but good for you for saying that. It was a great turning it around and giving a shout out to people that, especially because there are people too, that the only way they listen, they absorb books is through listening to them.
Yeah.
You know, I just, yeah.
Yeah. So we saw you, if by some chance, by some miracle, you happen to be one of the people that listen and we don't know who you are. We saw you and we appreciate you. All right. This went on twice as long as we thought it would, but that's okay.
Oh, it'll just be half an hour. Famous last words on this podcast. Famous last words.
All right. Any final alibis?
I'll just end with an uplifting story.
Please.
After the photo op, I was walking back to my car. I was in pain, and I didn't even get into this earlier, but like I have psoriatic arthritis. It's very hard for me sometimes to get around. So by the time I left, I was in a lot of pain, and I had like quite a few blocks to walk to the garage where my car was parked. So I was walking and I was kind of just like, oh, I want to get home. And there was this man set up on the corner of one of the streets. He had a guitar and he had a microphone and he had a camera set up, like his, just not a camera, his phone set up as a camera. Mm-hmm. And I'm walking past and he says, I looked at him because I was like, oh, music, you know? And he's like, would you like to sing a song with me?
Aww. And
I said, you know what? Sure. So
cool.
That's just the kind of person I am. So he said, what's your favorite band? And So I think this is part of my ADHD too, but whenever anyone asks me my favorite of anything, I forget everything that I've ever liked in my life.
Me too.
So I was like, but I did manage to say Bare Naked Ladies.
Yes.
And he was like, so, you know, what song do you want to sing? And I was, he's like, and then he gave me a couple, like, I couldn't even remember any song names. I've seen these people in concert like 10 times. I couldn't even remember any
their
songs. So anyway, we sang If I Had $1 Million. We sang the whole thing. He pulled up the guitar tabs. He pulled up the lyrics on his iPad and we sang the whole thing. And afterwards he said, so let me ask you something. How do you feel now that you've sang that? And I was like, you know what? I feel pretty good. And I hugged him and I said, is this going to be on like TikTok or something? And he's like, well, I'm not really sure. I can't really say. He's like, but give me your email. So if I ever end up using this somewhere, I'll let you know. And then I just finished walking to my car, but it really, I generally had a great day anyways at Comic-Con, yeah. But it really was like, that was a really nice way to end that day. So.
That's fantastic. I love that. How fun. I love that song.
My friends hope that I'm going to like end up on Jimmy Fallon or something, but I'm like, I don't think that this was quite that.
That'd be funny though.
But yeah, so good talk. Good stuff.
All right. Well, good talk. I think that was a talk we needed to have, and we'll be able to actually focus on the episode next week.
Next week.
Or, well, next week, well, for when we record. No idea what that's going to mean for you guys. As always, thank you so much for listening. We would love to hear from you, especially about this. Feel free to drop us a line on Twitter, on Tumblr, at Lord Johnlander, or on our WordPress site, lordjohnlander.wordpress.com/contact-us. And if you don't want us to say your name on the podcast, let us know and we will keep it anonymous. But we would love to chat about this some more. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you're listening to this, it means you survived another episode of Lord Johnlander. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter or Tumblr at Lord Johnlander or on our website at lordjohnlander.wordpress.com/contact-us.
All opinions expressed on the Lord Johnlander podcast belong to us and are not affiliated with Outlander, Sony, Stars, and definitely 100% not with Diana Gabaldon.
This podcast is not suitable for children, immature adults, homophobes, anyone who takes fandom seriously, people who don't understand that the characters aren't real, people with sticks up their ass, people who hate fun, and people with no sense of humor. Do not try any of these hot takes at home. We are professionals.
And if you know us in real life, no, you don't.